what I have been able to put together would not do the story justice. He glanced at the cat that watched him with interest and said, I hope to be able to fill in the blanks someday. The cat blinked lazily, and you might have imagined that it grinned. Rezkin surveyed the room. Wesson and Brandt were fixated on his telling. Millens was filling the cauldron with the water Farson had collected. Jimson had gone out to retrieve more, and the Minder, Farson, and Kai were watching the cat, which was just being a cat. Isaria sat at the table with a small bowl of water, rubbing furiously at the paint on her face. It was now smeared in a gray mess, as if she had stuck her wet face in a pile of ash. She would not meet his gaze, and he thought it had nothing to do with the paint. Chapter 4 Hileth Gedoran dropped her bag as she stepped down from the gangplank onto the blessed ground. She stumbled as the solid stone of the dock seemed to sway beneath her feet. Smoothing her skirt in vain, she surveyed her surroundings. The grandest doors she had ever seen stood open to reveal a chamber large enough to fit her entire estate. Well, what used to be her estate. Now it belonged to the Raven, like everything else in the Ashayan underworld, including her. Small white specks were shuffling about the chamber, moving crates and bags, sweeping and cleaning. She narrowed her eyes for a better look, and then one of the white specks turned toward her. As it got closer, she could see its pasty white skin, long claws and sharp teeth more clearly, and she began to backpedal. Just before it reached her, she bumped into something that stopped her retreat, and she yelped. She looked up to see a handsome blonde looking down at her. He said,
Careful, my lady. You should not wish to fall into the water.
Oh, that thing,
she said, pointing to the creature that seemed to be grinning up at her with pleading, pale blue eyes. The man took her elbow and moved her aside as he bent to retrieve her bag. He handed it to the little white creature, who grasped it with care as it waited.
He will not harm you, said the big blonde.
He tilted his head as he looked at her again.
Have we met? You look familiar.
She blinked at him and realized he was wearing the uniform of a soldier, but with an unfamiliar tabard. She hated when she ran into people she was supposed to know but could not remember. Who was she supposed to be? The man smiled as his gaze lit with knowledge.
Lady Gadarand, I remember you now, from Port Manai.
Oh?
She said, still not making the connection. He smiled and said,
I would not expect you to remember me, my lady. You were rather preoccupied with Lord Rezkin at the time.
Hileth flushed, a rare reaction for her, but she could not deny her attraction to the mysterious young lord. She said,
He is a most distracting individual.
Many concur, said the guard.
After an uncertain glance at the little white creature, Hileth turned to the man and gave him her full attention. Her appreciative gaze blatantly roved over his form, and she said,
You are an impressive specimen as well. Your name, sir?
The man gave her a polite bow and said,
I'm Second Lieutenant Draskin of the King's Army. It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Lady Gadarand.
Yes, of course it is, she said playfully. But the King's Army? Here?
He motioned toward the massive opening in the mountain and said,
Welcome to Kylerum. I serve the King of Kyle, true King of Ashai.
It is true, then. I was there when the mysterious dark tidings announced his claim to the Ashayan throne, and I heard rumors of the new kingdom.
Hileth placed the back of her hand to her forehead and swooned.
It was a dreadful voyage. We had not even been allowed to disembark in Saret before more refugees were shoved onto the ship. We were held there for weeks before we were finally sent to Uthrel. We had no guarantee a ship would collect us once we were there. They said that if none arrived, we would be sold to the slavers. I had been terrified for months.
I'm sorry for your troubles, my lady, but at least you managed to escape, Scutton. Many were not so fortunate.
She laid a hand on his arm and said,
Thank you, Lieutenant. Your concern is heartening. Such sentiments are rarities these days.
With a fearful edge that was only partially feigned, she said,
But what of this new king, Dark Tidings? Is he severe? Will he be gracious? What will become of me? Of all of us?
The lieutenant said,
He is certainly severe with his foes, but seems gracious enough with those in his charge. I am sure you have little reason to worry, since you are already acquainted.
I know the king?
She said, genuinely surprised.
Yes, the Lord Rezcan is now our king.
Lord Rezcan?
She mumbled in shock.
But he's so,
Young? He may be young, but he is more knowledgeable than anyone I've ever met. Please, Lady Gatherand, follow me. I will personally see that you are assigned decent quarters.
Thank you,
she said absently as she followed the lieutenant. The little white creature scurried after them, lugging her bag, and he seemed overjoyed to be doing it. Hilleth had no such feelings. She was supposed to stay close to Lord Rezcan, to keep an eye on him. How was she going to get near the king? Prior to this assignment, she had never even heard of Lord Rezcan. He was no one, insignificant. She had chased the mysterious man the length of the Tremadel, through battle and misery, and across the Sowellian Sea, only to find that he was completely out of her grasp. She had thought the Raven's assignment was meant to punish her, to get her out of the way, but now it seemed a pivotal role. The Raven had to have known. It could not be coincidence that the Raven had proclaimed his support for the true king, and that the true king was the very man to whom she was supposed to ingratiate herself. She was now certain that the Raven would reappear, and when he did, he would expect her to deliver. Hilleth was shaken from her thoughts by the mesmerizing display of glowing crystal mosaics, and she nearly bumped into the lieutenant when he stopped to allow a couple of women to pass in front of them. Something tickled her memory, and then a flutter of hope snaked through her.
Lady Frisha,
Hilleth said as she rushed forward. The young woman paused and looked at her with surprise.
Lady Gatherand?
Hilleth took Frisha's hand in an overly familiar grip and said,
It is good to see you well. I was so very concerned for you and all your companions. Please, tell me you all made it to this wondrous refuge safely.
Frisha's confusion was instantly replaced with melancholy.
Thank you for your concern, Lady Gatherand, but no. My cousin Pallas did not make it. He was...
Her eyes welled with tears.
He was killed in the escape.
Although unexpected, Hilleth was glad for the boon.
Oh, you poor dear,
she said as she stroked Frisha's hair.
I know what it means to lose someone you love dearly. If you ever need to talk, or just sit in silence with an empathetic friend, I would be honored to be of service.
Frisha shied away and Hilleth pulled her hands back with a gasp.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Lady Frisha. I only just found out that you are to be queen.
Frisha shook her head.
Oh, I...
Hilleth fluttered her hands as if flustered.
I have acted inappropriately. Please forgive my lack of formality. It has been an arduous journey and I'm out of sorts. Of course, Lady Gatherand, you are most welcome here. It is good to see that you are well, but I'm sure you must be terribly exhausted.
Frisha waved to a man who had several pouches tied to his waist, each overstuffed with scrolls.
We should see that you are assigned quarters immediately.
Draskin said,
I was just escorting Lady Gatherand to the quartermaster.
There is no need. I will make the assignment, said Lady Frisha.
She looked at Hilleth.
We all share quarters here, at least for now. We had a bit of trouble some weeks ago, but it seems to be over, so we shall not worry you over it now. Still, it is better if someone knows where you are at all times. You may share quarters with Lady Avena in the ladies' wing of the palace.
She smiled and said,
You will only be a few doors away from mine.
Hilleth's grin was genuine. Things were going better than she had hoped. Rezcan sat at the table in his suite poring over the map. Like all maps, it was slightly different from those he had previously studied. Some cartographers were better than others, and maps that had been reproduced were not always as accurate as the originals. This one had been provided by Privith, and it was a far more recent and detailed accounting of Eastern Pharrell than he had expected. It seemed Privith had been planning this for some time. He glanced out the window as something bright captured his attention. A woman in a long, flowing red skirt ambled from stall to stall examining the wares. The vibrant red fabric rustled in the breeze, and it reminded him of the 10 statues standing in a ring in a plantation courtyard beneath a flowering vine. He did not know why his thoughts should go to those men now. They were no longer of consequence. A loud clap sounded in the distance from the direction of the docks, breaking him from his reverie, and he went back to examining the map and making notes. Several minutes later, he heard a rat-tat, tat-tat-tat, thump. He rounded the table to admit his companions. Kai entered first, lugging one end of a squirming, overlarge burlap sack. He was followed by Farson, who maintained a tight grip on the other flailing end. They tossed the lump onto the settee, and Kai laughed as the subject struggled to free himself. Farson leaned against the wall with a bemused smirk. His face straightened as soon as he met Rezkin's hard gaze. Rezkin had not yet figured out the striker's intentions, but he would be prepared upon revelation. A head of shaggy brown hair emerged, and Tam shouted,
"Hey now! What was all that about?"
His gaze landed on Rezkin, and his face brightened.
"Rez! You're here!"
Before Rezkin could reply, Tam began a rambling monologue of his experiences in Uthrel over the past few weeks.
"And then he just threw his ale, and what was I supposed to do?"
He blinked at Rezkin, but the question seemed to be rhetorical because he did not wait for a response.
"Now, I know I was supposed to keep a low profile, but come on! I was drenched, and the golden dripper's ale smells like piss, so I..."
"Tam."
"Told him I'd meet him out in the alley and we could settle it like men, and then..."
"Tam."
"Well, you know, he got all huffy saying he was gonna wallop some desperate refugee kid..."
"Tam."
"You know that's what they call us now, right? Every Ashayan outside of Ashay is called a refugee. It doesn't matter if they're here on legit business..."
Rezkin raised his voice.
"Tamarin Blackwater!"
Tam's rambling abruptly stopped as he stared at Rezkin.
"There's no need to shout, Rez. I'm like 4 feet from you."
At that, Farson burst into laughter. Rezkin stared at him in wonder.
"You find this humorous?"
"Yes, yes I do," the striker said. "That young man has no idea who you are, and to hear him scold you in such a way, and you just stand there, I'm almost inclined to believe he is actually your friend."
Tam huffed and squared off with the striker.
"I am his friend. Who are you to talk? You trained him. You're like the only family he's got, and all you ever do is talk about him like he's some evil menace. I may not know everything about him, but I know he's a good person and a good friend."
Farson looked back at Rezkin.
"You've done well, even managing to incite true loyalty. I wonder how long it will last."
Rezkin gripped Tam's shoulder, halting his response.
"Pay him no heed. We have more important things to discuss."
Tam threw the striker a vicious glare.
"I don't know why you let him stick around."
Rezkin returned to his place behind the desk and leaned over the map. He met Farson's gaze over Tam's shoulder and said,
"Better to keep your enemies close."
Farson clenched his jaw and then looked away. Rezkin said,
"Let us move on."
Tam said,
"Why did you kidnap me?"
"You are not supposed to be associated with us. You are here to spy. We do not want anyone seeing you enter the building."
Rezkin glanced at the strikers. "Your abduction was probably overkill. I might have erred in allowing Kai to choose the method." Tam scowled at the grinning man and then turned back to Rezkin.
"Don't you think dragging an unwilling person through alleys in broad daylight is kind of obvious?"
Rezkin shrugged.
"Gendishan takes a hands-off approach to slavery. They do not engage in it, but do not interfere either."
"So they just let people be kidnapped?"
"No, I'm sure these two," he motioned to the strikers, "were surreptitious, but the few people who might have seen would probably rather not get involved. Now listen."
Rezkin briefly explained the nature of his mission, and Tam was almost bursting with excitement.
"A mythical sword? A real mythical sword? From prophecy? I can't wait! When do we leave?"
Rezkin shook his head. "You are not going." He watched as Tam's entire world collapsed with those four words.
"What do you mean I'm not going?"
Rezkin sighed.
"It is a ridiculous task. The sword cannot be magical in the way described in the prophecy."
"What do you mean?"
Tam said, refusing to be deterred.
"There are plenty of enchanted swords. You have enchanted swords!"
Rezkin glanced at Wesson, who had been practically hiding in the corner while maintaining the sound ward. The mage looked up, startled by the sudden attention.
"Oh!"
he said, and leapt from his chair. Wesson cleared his throat.
Where to start? Well, you see, certain enchantments like preventing rust, maintaining a sharp edge, or something against breakage are intended to preserve the material already present. They do not change the nature of the substance itself. Other enchantments, like the bond, those used for tracking items, or those that prevent people from using the weapons, are personal enchantments. They are designed to draw power from whoever is handling the weapon. They can store a certain amount of power, but eventually, the spells will fade. The prophecy of Eiri states that all of the Suellian will be swallowed by darkness. An invader will sweep across the lands, and if left unchecked, it will consume the world, or something like that. I was never very good with poetry, and of course, prophecies are always told by poets. Or maybe we only remember the prophecies that rhyme. Anyway, it goes on to say that a great king of Gendishan will lead an empire in the fight against the evil. We will know him because he will bear a magical sword, the flaming sword of Eiri, that will burn with the cleansing power of the Maker. Again, I am paraphrasing. There are supposedly more to the prophecy, but it has either been lost or the Gendishan have been spectacular at keeping the secret. The problem is, we cannot enchant blades to bear fire. The elemental powers are earth, fire, water, and air. A fifth power is life, but we do not generally refer to it as an element. I do not know why. That is not important right now. The point is, we cannot force one element to power another element. Earth and fire are often in confluence, but they both exist separately in their interactions, or combine to form something new. If we add fire to metal, it gets hot, becomes soft, and then melts. The metal's form is not sustained. To preserve the blade, we would have to add a protective shield, which would keep the metal and fire separate. Tam nodded vigorously. The blade would be surrounded by fire, but the fire would not be in the blade. Wouldn't that satisfy the prophecy?
Wesson shook his head.
No, because the metal cannot power the fire. They are two different elements, and they would be separated by the shield anyway. So what would power the fire?
The wielder?
Tam said. Wesson nodded.
It would have to be, but there are a few problems with that. First, it would mean the sword itself is not enchanted. Second, none of the kings of Gendishan are mages. And third, the wielder would have to be a mage with a significant affinity for fire. I'm such a mage, so I know how difficult it would be. Creating fire can be sloppy. A quick light of a candle flame is easy, but you could just as easily burn down a forest. Igniting a sword, maintaining the shape, controlling the size and extent of the flame, fueling the flame, would all require extreme focus. Plus, you must avoid setting yourself on fire. Just because we generate the fire does not mean we are immune to it. We must integrate wards into the fire spells to shield ourselves. Plus, to generate fire, you are using a lot of Imara, and the well is not infinite. I am an extremely powerful fire mage, and even I would only be able to maintain all those spells for a brief time. It would last a few minutes at most.
Is that not long enough? Said Tam.
No. It is clear from the prophecy that the sword will burn for the duration of the war. I'm telling you, it is not possible to enchant a fire sword. If it were, every swordman would have one. They would burn down the kingdom.
But it is a prophecy. It must come true.
Rezkin handed Tam a cup of water. He said, You are getting worked up over nothing, Tam. I have read many so-called prophecies, and I have yet to find one that came true. They are spoken by charlatans to earn fame or reward. Tam was crestfallen.
Then why look for the sword?
Rezkin shook his head. It is what Privith wants.
The Gendishan are fanatical about the prophecy.
I'm sure you can understand why. Somehow Gendishan gains an empire and saves the world. It is a fantasy tale.
Then at least let me go with you, Tam pleaded. So what if the sword is a fraud? It would be an adventure nonetheless.
This task is too dangerous, and you already have the attention of too many who might wish you harm. Besides, I need you here.
Tam's face screwed up in anger. He balled his fists, and then he lurched to his feet before proceeding to pace rapidly in front of the table.
No. No! You were undefeated in the King's Tournament. You have met with two foreign kings. You saved a princess. You claimed an ancient palace of legend.
You have dead elven wraiths bowing to you. Now you are being sent on a quest to retrieve a magical sword of prophecy.
He spread his hands and stared at Rezkin.
Where was I? You said I could join you in your adventures, but you leave me out every time.
Rezkin frowned. I had no intention of leaving you out of anything. You have been at my side for most of those events.
No, I wasn't at your side. I was being safe on the ship, or being safe in the stands, or being safe in the warehouse.
Rezkin shook his head. Perhaps you misunderstand my motives. I have not set out to have adventures. I am only carrying out tasks needed to fight a war against tyranny to make sure you are all safe.
Exactly, Tam said. You are out saving people and fighting wars while I'm stuck drowning in piss ale in musty taverns.
Tam, your role here is not insignificant. Uthrel is a major shipping port, and with the current political climate, it is probably the most significant on the Sewellian. How is your Gendishan?
Tam paused with the abrupt change in subject.
It's fine. I mean, I'm doing okay. I don't sound like a native, and I can understand a lot more than I can speak, but I do okay. The mages sped up my learning, but it left me with a terrible persistent headache. They said it'll go away, eventually.
You had this plan since Scutton, didn't you? Everyone else is mourning Pallas's death or gossiping about their troubles, but I was learning Gendishan.
Tam glanced down as drops of blood dripped onto his pants. He pulled a blood-stained kerchief from his pocket and held it to his nose.
I think I need to see a healer. These nosebleeds are coming more frequently.
Rezkin glanced at Wesson.
The mage said, How often?
Oh, about every other day.
What do you think it is? Is something wrong with me?
It is probably just the weather, Rezkin said, and Wesson slid him a dissatisfied glance. How about...
No, wait, Tam said. You're keeping something from me.
What is it?
Does this have to do with the headaches?
You will be fine, Rezkin said.
Rezkin!
Tam snapped. Rezkin sighed and leaned against the desk. What the mages did to help you learn more quickly is not exactly healthy.
Wesson frowned at Rezkin.
What he means is that it is dangerous and banned by the Mage Academy.
What? You mean you're damaging my mind?
Rezkin said, Well, yes, but only a little. If it was safe, everyone would do it, and everyone would be experts in everything. The mages had to open a path into your mind, to your memory, which allows information to flow in unfiltered and become trapped there. The mind is not meant to work like that. In a few weeks, Healer Jespia and Mage Andrus will visit to close the window and repair most of the damage.
Most of the damage?
The body is resilient, said Rezkin.
So I have a magical hole in my head, and I was stuck in Uthrel while you were off fighting monsters and meeting with the king. I thought that if you did anything important in Gendishan, I would get to go with you, but no. No. You're off to... Where are you going? Let me guess. You are going to fight a dragon, or make a deal with the Fae Queen.
The Fae do not have a queen. They are led by the ancients. Tam scowled at him.
That wasn't the point. Where are you going?
Pharrell.
What's in Pharrell?
Rezkin glanced at the strikers and said, The Adana Ro.
All right,
Tam said with a huff as he plopped into a chair.
What's that?
It is they, and they are why you cannot go with me. The Adana Ro are a guild of assassins.
Another assassin's guild?
Their attention peaked. Kai and Farson both looked at Rezkin quizzically. He ignored them. They are not strictly assassins, Rezkin said. More like a political movement. In Ferelli, Adana means warrior, and Ro roughly translates to the innocent. They have an unusual definition of innocent, however. To them, there are people who understand the world, how it really works. People who have encountered death and murder and corruption. They are called the Rook. They are people who know how to swindle, lie and cheat. The kind of people who know about Assassin's Guild. People who know the darkness.
With less confidence, Tam said,
People like you.
Rezkin tilted his head. Yes, people like me. People like them, he said with a nod toward the strikers. But the Adana Ro recognize a different kind of people. The Ro, the people of light. People like you and Frisha, the Jabais and Tiran.
Tam scrunched his face.
How can you call me innocent, Rez?
I've killed before.
That is how their definition differs from yours. The Ro live in the same world as the rest of us, but see it differently. Many of you know the darkness exists, but it is apart from you. Every once in a while, you are forced to interact with it. Maybe you are robbed or must kill in defense of a friend, but those times are exceptional to you. People like you see beauty and goodness in others. You seek adventure for the sake of adventure, and you believe that good will prevail. You walk in the light.
Reskin glanced at Farson.
I was taught that the Ro were inconsequential. In the real world, the light gets little done. To make a difference, one must travel in darkness. The Adana Ro recognize this as well, but they believe the darkness should remain within the darkness. They believe it is their duty to protect the Ro, and not just in a physical sense. They protect the Ro from becoming a part of the darkness, to preserve their innocence.
But you said they are assassins. Isn't that hypocritical?
They walk in the darkness so you do not have to. You are Ro, Tam. But I have been training you to be a warrior. I believe it is in your best interest to know about the world, about the darkness, so that you can protect yourself from it. I have introduced you to parts of the darkness you would never have known as a carpenter's apprentice. I have been actively drawing Ro into the darkness, and not just you. In the eyes of the Adana Ro, this is the most wicked of crimes.
How would they know what you've been doing? Why would they care? Men are trained for the military who join up with thieves and bandits all the time. I don't hear about an army of assassins swooping in to save their innocence.
Reskin sighed. I attracted their attention a while back, and they have been trying to find and follow me ever since. He noted the shared look between Farson and Kai, and he knew they would have questions. By the time I find them, they will have already figured out what I have been doing.
So what? You're a king. You were supposed to create an army. It's what kings do,
Reskin said. They have other reasons to be interested in me. While Tam might not follow through on that line of thought, Reskin knew that with the seed planted, the strikers would not stop until they knew his secrets. It was inevitable that they would figure it out eventually.
This is one of those things you're not going to tell me, isn't it?
Reskin tilted his head. If I do not go to them, they will continue to seek me, and there is a greater chance one of you will get hurt.
But you said they protect the innocent.
They seek to protect you from becoming one of us. Some of them would rather see Ro dead than tarnished.
So, you're saying that you're going into a den of assassins who hate you and would kill me so that I don't end up like them?
Now do you see why you cannot go with me?
How is the garden?
Said Frisha. Apprentice Mage Aplin Gell stood from where he had been planting new seedlings in the freshly tilled soil. He wiped his hands on his robes and tossed chocolate locks from his eyes.
Greetings, Lady Frisha and Lord Tyrion. The plants are doing well out here. We're still having trouble getting anything to grow in the city, though. I think maybe it has to do with the soil.
What do you mean?
Well, soil needs decaying plant material, insects, worms and the like, if new plants are to survive. Otherwise, well, it is just sediment. Nothing was living within the city for the longest time. Mage Morghese is considering replacing what is there with fresh soil from beyond the Corvewa.
That sounds like a lot of work,
Tyrion said.
Show her your project.
Frisha forgave him the interruption upon hearing the excitement in his voice. Alpin chuckled and said,
Ah, Lord Tyrion, I do not think Lady Frisha would be interested.
Nonsense, it is fantastic. Show her.
Frisher smiled at the mage's endearing embarrassment. Alpin was a handsome young man, a few years her senior. According to his masters, he already had several accomplishments to his name, not that he ever spoke of them. Alpin was not the sort to brag.
Yes, my lord, if you insist.
He glanced at Frisher and said,
Please, come this way, Lady Frisher.
Little white creatures scurried between them, lugging pots and gardening tools to various parts of the garden. The mage led Frisha and Tyrion around a path and through another garden to a newly constructed building that lay just outside the Corvewa. It had a stone frame and was open on the sides and top. She could not see them, but Alpin explained that the open spaces were covered by wards.
We can change the wards to permit different amounts of light, water, and air.
I suppose that sounds important, Frisher said. I've heard that some plants prefer more light than others.
Alpin smiled. He smiled often, Frisher had noticed, and his smile was easy, genuine.
Yes, and this structure allows us to control many factors that are important for experimentation. I have never seen one so simple to maintain. Journeyman battle mage Wesson made the ward. I'm ashamed to admit that, like the other mages, I was skeptical that someone with a natural destructive affinity could create anything this efficient and stable. These wards are much simpler in design than what I'm used to seeing, and they require less frequent charging. I would love to be able to create something this refined.
Have you considered working with him? Frisher said.
Me? Oh no, I've not worked up the nerve to approach him.
You're afraid to speak to Wesson? I'm sure he would be happy to meet you. He is knowledgeable and kind, very much like you.
Thank you, Lady Frisher, he said.
His gaze dropped to the ground, and Frisher realized how her words had sounded even though she had spoken only truth. Tyrion cleared his throat.
Shall we see your work?
Oh, yes, here,
Alpin said, as he skirted a massive table in the center of the structure, leading them toward the rear. On either side were long tables covered with potted plants, sacks of soil, pitchers, and gardening tools. At the end of the room was a small tree. Its trunk was bent, and its gangly limbs were twisted to fit within the confines of the building. The bark was nearly black, and the leaves were small crimson things with many points. Amongst the leaves were orange and purple orbs of varying sizes.
This is what I made,
Alpin said, and Tyrion grinned in appreciation.
You made a tree, said Frisher.
Alpin looked at the plant again.
Ah, I guess it does look like a tree now that it has grown. It is actually a mass of vines. They are so tightly entwined that it looks like a single large trunk. I did not make it, exactly. I mean, we cannot create life, but we do breed different plants together to develop new ones.
Don't farmers do that kind of thing?
Yes, but we tweak them with Vimara. Sometimes we are able to combine plants in ways that would not be possible under mundane conditions. It is like making a mage material only with something living. We call them vimaral plants. Some mages do it with animals, but the practice is highly regulated by the Mage Academy, and it is almost impossible to obtain the necessary permit. There are fewer restrictions on creating vimaral plants. This one is a combination of the beans we brought on the ship and a plant one of the mountain men collected somewhere across the bowl.
He frowned.
I think we're all tired of beans. We have not identified many edible native plants on the island, at least not any that taste good. Lord Tyrion has been encouraging us to make something more appetizing.
Tyrion grinned and rocked on his feet.
It is a serious priority.
Alpin reached up and plucked an orb the size of his fist.
They start out orange. As they ripen, they darken to purple. This one looks perfect.
He handed the fruit to Frisher.
Go on, try it.
Frisher bit into the orb and was pleasantly surprised by the sweet, tart burst of flavor.
Oh, this is amazing.
Alpin shook his head.
Yes, but you should probably not eat too much. They are quite intoxicating.
Frisher glanced down at the purple and orange delight as it dribbled succulent juice onto the dirt floor.
The fruit is intoxicating?
Tyrion grinned and plucked one for himself. He took a large bite and said,
Yes, the juice is like sweet wine. We do not even have to wait for them to ferment.
Frisher rolled her eyes and handed the fruit to the mage.
I should have known.
Tyrion slapped Alpin on the shoulder and said,
He is a genius.
Alpin diverted his gaze.
I'm only an apprentice.
Well, you are far more knowledgeable and skilled than I, Tyrion said.
Oh, I doubt that, Lord Tyrion. You have a significant talent.
Technically, I'm only an apprentice as well.
Still, you are to be Duke.
Tyrion frowned.
A title I was not required to earn. I've done nothing to deserve it.
He shook his head and lightened his tone.
I give credit where it is due.
Frisher gave him an incredulous look and said,
No, you usually don't.
Tyrion appeared surprised she would say such a thing, and Frisher was too. He then turned to Alpin and said,
You have worked hard. My talent is raw, unrefined. This,
he gazed at the tree, is a masterpiece.
Frisher
glanced between the two men who were busy stroking each other's egos. She smiled and said,
This is all great, but weren't you trying to make food?
Come now, Frisher. Surely you can see the benefit. Kyle needs export. We will be the only kingdom to supply this wine, and we can do it faster and easier than anyone else.
Frisher pursed her lips.
Yes, but they don't know that.
Both men looked at her with uncertainty, not knowing if she was supporting or rejecting the idea. She said,
Look, if only we are producing the wine, but everyone wants it, then it becomes a delicacy. Delicacies are expensive. Less is more.
Ah, Tyrion said. I like the way you think. If we sell fewer bottles, the price grows higher.
Exactly, but we have to be careful to maintain the proper balance. We sell only so much that people are willing to pay more to get their hands on them, but we must be careful not to drive the price so high that people lose interest. We will have to market it in such a way that the higher classes see it as a privilege to acquire, but also so that their peers expect them to serve it at formal occasions.
Tyrion chuckled.
I had no idea you were so adept at manipulating the nobility.
Well, I am not an expert by any means, but I did listen to my father sometimes. He wanted to make sure I could run the business in case my future husband turned out to be inept. It's just that, well, I wasn't very interested, so I didn't pay enough attention.
Tyrion rubbed the back of his neck.
I suppose I can understand that.
Frisher turned to Alpin.
Thank you for showing us your work. It sounds like what you've done is not easy. You should be proud of yourself.
Thank you, Lady Frisher. You are most welcome to come back any time.
As they strolled through the freshly cultivated gardens, Tyrion said,
What do you really think?
Frisher smiled ruefully.
I know little about plants. My home in Cheswick was in the city. We had a small herb garden, but mostly my mother and maid took care of it. I think it did not require much maintenance.
A cool sea breeze mixed with the scent of soil, fresh-cut plants and blooms tugged at Tyrion's tunic and ruffled the green scarf Frisher wore somewhere on her person nearly every day. He said,
I try not to think of home often, but this place brings up old memories. We had many gardens on our estates. My mother enjoyed spending time in them, but she did not like getting her hands dirty. I had a private tutor in the talent for a while, but my father said it was beneath a duke to toil in the garden. We have servants for that, he would say.
But plants are your thing, aren't they?
Tyrion nodded.
Yes. My talent presented early. I was only 12. I remember that, as a child, I always enjoyed spending time with my tutor in the garden. My father, however, spoke disparagingly of him. My father is so confident, so self-assured. He is the duke. People respect him. No one would dare contradict him.
He sucked in a sharp breath and said,
The last time I saw my tutor, I was 15. I said to him, If plants could grow coins, then your talent might be worth something.
It was what my father had said to me the night before at dinner. My tutor refused to work with me after that. And now that I look back on it, I cannot say I blame him. Frisher had no idea how to respond, so she said nothing. They ambled along the path toward the palace in awkward silence. Eventually, her uncontrollable tongue got the better of her.
You surprised me back there.
How so?
Well, you usually don't show much appreciation for those of lower station.
He is a mage, said Tyrion.
Yes, not nearly a duke, she replied, and he is only an apprentice.
He has worked many more years on the talent than I. He has earned his place. What have I earned?
What have you tried to earn? She said.
Tyrion again looked at her, as if she had lost her mind for saying such a thing. She smiled playfully.
Oh, I don't really blame you. I can't say that I've done anything worth mentioning.
I am the heir to a dukedom. You are much younger, and a woman. You are not expected to do anything.
Frisher nodded.
I know, but should I not try because it is not expected? To be honest, I never even thought about it. I knew I would marry and have children. All of my friends were the same, except Tam, of course, but now I know women who are mages. Isaria is a swordmaster. Even Raylan has worked hard to become a warrior. During all the time, they were training and learning. What was I doing? Dreaming about my future husband is all. Worrying over how terrible he might be. Hoping for the best.
Perhaps you might have done more, but you still have time. And there is one very big difference between you and me.
He paused, and she with him. His gaze traced her face and then caught on the scarf.
He started walking again and said,
You treat everyone well. You are always kind to them, and you are not afraid to speak on their behalf. Their stations in life do not seem to matter to you. You have done well with our task.
Trisha shook her head.
Reskin put us both in charge, although I'm still not sure why he chose me.
You ought to be his queen,
Tyrion said, and she knew he had seen her wince.
People feel comfortable working with you. More come to you with their problems than to me. People like you.
I'm sure they like you too. They're probably just intimidated by you,
she said, her tone hopeful but not convincing. Tyrion turned his gaze to the road.
I think Alpin likes you.
Frisha smiled, but he did not see, since he was busy staring at the stones on the path, his brow furrowed in contemplation.
I like him too, she said. He seems very nice.
Tyrion shook his head.
Without looking up, he said, No, that is not what I meant.
Her cheeks heated, and Frisha suddenly found the path to be interesting as well.
Oh, I don't think he thinks of me like that.
No? I doubt he would ever say it. No one wants to upset the king. And besides, I cannot imagine you would give up a chance to be queen for a mage.
I don't want to be queen,
Frisha blurted.
Tyrion's head came up and he stopped. You do not wish to marry Reskin?
No, that's not what I meant. I was only referring to the part about being queen, but, well, I'm not sure about the other either.
Tyrion looked astonished, and he did not bother to hide it.
You cannot be serious. I know Reskin would do pretty much anything to make you happy.
Frisha nodded slowly.
Yes, but I'm beginning to think he does it because he thinks he has to for some reason.
She fingered her scarf and said,
He gave this to me when we first met. I thought it was a courting gift. Now that I know him better, I think he just didn't want me to get cold.
Tyrion furrowed his brow.
That is the point of a scarf, Frisha huffed.
I know, but I don't think he did it because he cared. I think it was just practical.
I'm not convinced, Frisha. He went to a lot of trouble to get the peerage, especially me, to accept you. You probably have no clue what he has done for you.
No, I probably don't. But you said he wants me to be happy. What if I'm not happy with him?
Tyrion was at a loss.
How can you not be happy with him? He is everything. He can be everything. Whatever you want him to do, he can do it.
Can he love me?
What difference does it make? You were never guaranteed love. Nobles do not have the luxury of love. I will not have love.
She turned to stare across the bowl at the mountains beyond.
But we are no longer in Ashai. We are not bound by the rules of Ashaian society. Reskin makes the rules. Reskin wants us to be happy.
Tyrion spun, exasperated, and waved his arms as he spoke. His emotions began to erupt.
It is not so simple, Frisha. We are going back to Ashai. I have a responsibility to Wellenven. You will be married to Reskin, or whomever Markham chooses. Reskin will be king. Everything will return to normal.
Do you really think that? We stand here in a magical kingdom across the sea, while war rages in Ashai. Do you really think anything will go back to normal?
Yes! It will! It must!
His outburst was punctuated by a horn blast from the docks. Tyrion took several deep breaths and then turned back toward the palace.
Tyrion?
What?
Catching up to him, she said,
You won't tell him, will you?
He met her gaze. His look carried as much turmoil as she felt.
No. Surely it is only cold feet. It is normal. You will come to your senses.
The chill slid over Reskin's skin as soon as he had passed the Corvea, and now that he was on the dock, he could feel it seeping deeper into his flesh and muscles. It was not the biting, frigid cold of winter, but rather the soothing, cool embrace of a pool on a warm summer day. He felt relaxed, like he had returned home. He immediately checked the stone hanging from his neck, and it was still in place. After a quick test, he realized it was still protecting him from the worst of the calming effect. His people had come to greet the ship, as usual. Many prepared to mount a defense in case the peaceful arrival was a ruse and the ship had truly been captured by insurgents. Reskin realized that in the several weeks he had been absent, they had been afforded plenty of time to plot against him.
He furtively scanned the faces around him, careful not to give away any clues that he might suspect betrayal. For each individual, he calculated the odds that he or she might want to do him harm, and two of the greatest threats approached him first. Tiran bowed and said,
King Rezkin, I am pleased that you have returned and appear to be well.
Rezkin studied Tiran. Did his cousin appear different from when he had left? He knew the display had been for the crowd's benefit, but were the words sincere? He doubted it could be so simple. At Tiran's side stood Frisha. She was wearing a dress, the loose skirt having enough fabric for her to easily hide a number of weapons. Was the green scarf over her head supposed to be a distraction? She smiled at him. Was it genuine? He thought he saw uncertainty in her gaze.
King Rezkin, I too am glad to see you, she said as she performed a practiced curtsy.
Rezkin glanced at Tiran. He knew the other nobles had been working with her on her speech and language. The greeting was more formal than she would normally have given him, and it did not sound sincere. The stone on his chest heated, and his head began to clear of a fog he had not realized was present. He blinked at the two, his cousin and his betrothed? Again he saw the uncertainty. He shook his head. It was apparent he was having another episode. He had nearly forgotten about them since he had not had one the entire time he had been gone from the island. It was a concerning revelation. His friends exchanged looks and shifted uncomfortably. He realized he had not yet greeted them, and everyone was waiting. He smiled.
Greetings, cousin, he said to Tiran. Frisha, you look well. I trust all has been calm in my absence.
Oh, yes, Frisha said. You will love the new programs we have implemented.
You have implemented programs? He said. Tiran donned a cocky grin.
My hybridization project has produced promising results, and Frisha has negotiated a warrior training program.
Rezkin looked to Frisha. You started a warrior training program? She lifted her chin and said,
What? You do not think I am capable? I recognize what you want for this kingdom, and I can help make it happen.
Are you a part of this program? He said.
I am. Sort of. I'm trying anyway. Actually, everyone is required to attend basic lessons. There are incentives for reaching advanced levels.
And who is teaching these lessons?
Death is being us,
said a booming voice that echoed through the warehouse to the dock. Just as the Eastern Mountains men approached, a black and brown furball shot past, scurrying between their legs. Tiran said,
You took your cat with you?
No, said Frisha. I have been feeding his cat. Where did that one come from?
Gorel and his men saluted Rezkin with a fist across the heart.
We teach the ways of the Eastern Mountains, a tribute from the Vergnacht tribe to the people of our chieftain. Kyle will be a great warrior kingdom.
Rezkin's gaze passed over the two mountain men standing behind their leader, and then came to rest on Gorel. The man was a leader in his own right, and he had ample time while Rezkin was away to gain influence with the nobles and mages. He had obviously won over Frisha, somehow convincing her to allow him to train the people. What insidious betrayal was he planning? Kai stalked by, leading Pride from the ship as he grumbled about the ornery beast. The horse chomped its teeth and snorted at the striker as if it could understand. A flick of its tail lashed Rezkin's hand, jarring his thoughts from the murky fog that had silently invaded his mind. Inhaling sharply, he tilted his head to stretch the muscles tensing in his neck. He pushed the paranoid thoughts away, recognizing that Gurel had never appeared to covet power.
Excellent, he said. The people of Kael are honored by your generous gift.
Gurel and his men grunted in unison, a gruff, celebratory cheer.
If you are wanting to witness the training, we are meeting in the central square an hour after midday meal.
Thank you for the invitation, but I have little time.
Frisch's eyes widened as the others disembarked, each leading a horse or two.
You bought horses?
Brandt said. Not just any horses. These are Gendish in red. We stole them from the army.
You did what?
Brandt grinned. Not to worry, Frisha. They no longer needed them since they were all dead.
Malchus punched him in the arm.
Shut up, Brandt! Why would you tell her that?
Brandt looked at his friend.
You have completely lost the speck of humor you once had. Besides, she's going to hear the story. Not even you would keep it to yourself. We have war stories, Malchus, real war stories.
Tiran said,
I thought you were going on a diplomatic mission to speak with the king.
Brandt grinned. We did, but we had to destroy a double cavalry patrol and a horde of Drowglicks to get there.
Shut up, Brandt, Malsius said. If you want to tell war stories, you cannot tell the good parts first. You have ruined the story.
You're both idiots,
Isaria said as she passed. Tyrann sputtered.
You are going to let her speak to you like that? You are welcome to try to make her stop,
Malsius grumbled. Tyrann looked to his king.
Rezkin, are you going to do something about this? We have a hierarchy for a reason.
Rezkin watched the red-headed warrior trudge into the warehouse under the weight of her armor, weapons, and pack, while leading her newly acquired horse. She had not complained once during their excursion, and she had set aside her emotions to put up with undeserved criticism. He looked back at Tyrann and said, Arrange a ceremony. Rezkin dropped his belongings in his room and checked on Kat, who vibrated when he stroked her fur. After changing into a set of simple traveling clothes, he left the palace. Before anything else, Rezkin wanted to check the site of the battle against the demon. Although people kept constant watch on the area and were mapping the tunnels, he preferred to perform his own assessment. As he walked through the city, he had a sense of being watched. It was not an unusual sensation, considering the 17 elven wraiths that inhabited the citadel, but this felt more substantial. He checked around every corner, and in every shadow, and still found nothing. Something about the island or the citadel made him suspicious, and the only way he had found to counteract it was the stone he wore around his neck. Even that was not completely effective. He stepped beyond the Corveua, taking the garden path around the city's perimeter toward the wooded area. The tenseness in his shoulders began to relax as he walked further from the citadel, and he realized that his concerns must have been in his mind. As he approached the drop-off that led to the pool where Isaria and the others had been held, he felt the thrill of battle energy burst through his veins. He felt a sense of motion in the air, a spurious whistle on the wind. He dodged, then ducked behind a tree. He looked back the way he had come, searching for the source of the attack. Then he surveyed the tree trunk to find a slim, silver throwing dagger lodged in its bark. After calculating the direction of the projectile's source and maximum possible distance over which it could retain enough force to sink into the tree, with consideration of its size and probable weight, he realized the assailant had to have been within 10 yards. Rezkin withdrew the small crossbow that was hidden beneath his cloak and made a circuit of the area. Despite his earlier sense of impending doom, he no longer felt the presence of another. As he returned to his original position, he spied Shazar and Millens walking toward him. When they reached him, Shazar's gaze flicked to the crossbow. Then he examined Rezkin with a critical eye. The striker said, May we assist you, your majesty?
Yes, said Rezkin. You can search for whoever just attacked me.
Shazar and Millens both tensed and glanced around them.
Shazar said, He got away?
Rezkin surveyed the foliage as he spoke. I never saw him. I sensed the attack and managed to avoid the knife he threw at me. He pointed to the tree, but the knife was gone. Shazar and Millens both looked at the tree and then back to him. Shazar said, We have seen no one out here besides you.
Where is your escort?
I need no escort. My pardon, your majesty, but if you are being attacked, out in the open no less, you should be accompanied by a guard and at least one mage.
Rezkin considered the details of the attack.
I do not believe it was his intent to kill me. It was an excellent throw, well practiced. Perhaps it was a warning or an announcement of his presence.
Shazar glanced back at the tree and then returned his gaze to Rezkin.
Are you sure it was an attack? Perhaps a branch broke?
I know an attack, said Rezkin. It was a small silver throwing knife, only slightly different from my own.
Are you missing any?
No, and I own none like it.
He eyed Shazar suspiciously and then dismissed the idea. The attack would have come from the wrong direction, and Shazar had been with Millens. Rezkin stepped up to the tree. He could see a divot that might have been caused by the tip of a blade. With another glance backward, he ordered Shazar to lead the rest of the way to the demon attack site. Millens took the rear. Rezkin was uncomfortable with the man at his back, but Millens was slow. He was sure he would be able to fend off an attack from the sergeant.
In the receiving chamber of the makeshift throne room, Frisha looked at herself in the strange mirror. In the dark, the mirror was clearer than glass, and she could see right through it, but the light of the lamp caused it to become reflective. The image was of her wearing one of the few gowns she had kept for herself. For this particular occasion, she felt a more somber appearance would be appropriate. It was not her ceremony, after all. Her appearance was not all that important. She had donned the black skirt with the fitted tunic bearing Rezkin's crest, or rather, the crest of Kyle.
"Are you jealous?"
Frisha glanced at Raylan.
"No, of course not. Why would I be jealous?"
Raylan shrugged.
"It's Isaria. Tall, beautiful, exotic Isaria. I'm jealous." "Well, I don't see any reason to be jealous," Frisha said. "I never really thought it through before. I mean, it was new and different and seemed exciting, but..."
She glanced at the warrior chieftain standing across the hall.
"Since Rezkin has been gone, I have concluded that this is definitely something I don't want. I guess you know yourself best, but I think it's just an excuse. I didn't realize Rez was paying that much attention to Isaria, you know, after the thing with Pallas. She deserves this. She is a strong warrior, and that is important to this new kingdom,"
Raylan said.
"I still think it's weird that you're involved in this ceremony."
As Frisha turned toward the entrance to the largest chamber where a dais had been built, she said,
"So do I."
She then entered and stood upon the raised platform between Tirin and Ilanet. Rezkin appeared at the entrance to the hall, and her thoughts of not wanting him fled. Even when he had been dressed in filthy traveling clothes and worn armor, he had been strikingly handsome. But the dark warrior king who looked at her now with ice in his eyes was something otherworldly. His confidence flowed with every graceful motion. A certainty of his being endowed each movement with intent. His fluid approach was on silent feet, and she briefly wondered if this ethereal man was, in fact, another specter forged of the mystical citadel. He stopped in front of her, a few steps short of the dais. He gave her a slight bow and said, "I'm pleased that you agreed to be a part of this. A public show of your support will be significant in the future." Frisha caught herself staring at his lips and then reminded herself to speak aloud.
"Of course. I am honored you would ask me, but I do not see how my involvement is important."
His topaz gaze was enchanting, and she could barely follow his words as he said, "Everyone knows of our betrothal. The people were already inclined to look to you for guidance." He glanced at Tirin and back. "It has been brought to my attention that you have gained the favor of many. Isaria is about to receive an official position of power. She, being a woman, will need your support."
"I understand," she said, "but I'm still uncomfortable with this."
"I know," he said, "but you will get used to it." He then turned to greet Ilanet, who stood as both a visiting royal and Rezkin's ward to Frisha's left. Ilanet smiled and said,
"Master Tamrin will be upset that he missed this."
"I have no doubt," Rezkin said. "He is already frustrated with me about not taking him on my next mission."
"Well, I'm glad of it,"
she said.
"I do not know where you are going, but it sounds like it will be dangerous. You will not leave Tam in Uthro for long, will you?"
"He is performing an important task, but he will return once my business with Gendishan is concluded. Are you so eager for his return?" She blushed.
"He is my friend. The first I have had, I think. But, well, he has barely spoken to me since discovering who I am. I wish to make amends."
Rezkin said, "I will do my best to conclude the matter quickly." She smiled, and then he stepped onto the dais to take his position. A few minutes later, the doors opened again, this time to permit the long train of guests. Rezkin's subjects approached first in pairs and were introduced formally by name and title as they bowed to their king. The visitors came next, seemingly appreciative of the spectacle. Once the audience was gathered on either side of the hall, two lines of the king's guard entered to take up positions along the path to the dais. Wesson strode up the aisle next, wearing a black fitted robe overlaid with black panels trimmed in red. Unlike the other mages, Wesson did not wear the sigil of Kyle, since he had never sworn fealty to Rezkin. Despite this, he took his position on the dais to the king's right,
the position that was, by tradition, filled by the king's mage or first consul, depending on the kingdom. While there had been many whispers about the journeyman being the king's choice for the position, and many more rejecting the ridiculous notion, this was the first time Reskin had made his decision clear. Since they did not have the luxury